I'd hold up on that and see if I'm any good. You know, my name is Don. I'm an alcoholic. And wow, this is great. It's a pleasure to stand. Well, it's a pleasure to be able to stand on Friday night. You know, I wasn't always able to do that, and I don't think I have to explain that to any of you guys or gals here. I want to, of course, thank the committee for bringing me out here, and I want to thank Denny. He just showed us such a good time, and I really want to thank him. But Terry wants to thank Sharon for putting us in a store today where we are able to really boost your economy. So I hope you'll hope you'll be happy. And I can't do all the things because we don't do that in L.A. But by through the grace of God and sponsorship, I've been sober since December 26th, 1981. We don't do that out in L.A., but a lot of things we do out there you guys don't do. But I figure when in Rome, you know, do as the Romanians or, you know, whatever that means. It took me a while for this to happen, and I used to hear it all the time. But I have now, as of December 26th of last year, I have now been sober for as long as I drank. Now, I might be a light in this room. I might be a lightweight. I started drinking at 17. My dad was a great big guy like myself, and there was no drinking around the house. A couple reasons. One is because he told us not to. The other is he told me something really lame. He said it was against the law to drink before you were, you know, and that's how I was brought up. So that would probably explain quite a bit of it. And but right after my father was killed, and strangely enough, he was hit by a drunk driver, and who was sent home from work. He was too drunk to wield a hammer, so they stuck him in a car, and both fathers perished in that accident, and leaving two families. So alcoholism affects the families. But instead of taking care of my mom and my three sisters, which probably a normal person or a responsible person would have done, I immediately moved out because with Dad gone, now I was free to do the things that I wanted to do. And I always was interested in some sort of show business or something. I don't know, when I was a kid, I used to listen to the 33 records in those days, of the Broadway shows, and I'd dance around the house, you know, and I'm straight, okay? I want you to know that. But I could get a pretty good high kick, and oh, you know. So I wanted to get into something, and I started hanging out in a little town in Ontario, California, and there was a radio station, and I went in on the summer, and when I was about 17 years old, I got a job to replace the disc jockeys, and when they went on vacation for this short time, and I was so excited. My friend says, well, we should have a drink to that, you know. So I said, all right, well, where are we going to get it? We're too young. He says, my mom's got a liquor cabinet. He opened that up, and I'd never had a drink before, but I was still pretty impressed that there was just about enough for that evening. I was pretty close, I was sure. So I took that first drink, and it went down, and it warmed me, and I don't know why I'm telling you guys this, you know this, you know. But for the first time in my life, I stood up and I felt like I was 6 feet 2 inches tall, and I was already 6'4", but you know, it made me feel, you know, like I was somebody. And I said what I was to say for the next 24 years: if one drink makes me feel this good, what do you suppose two and three and four? I don't need to tell you the story. And, you know, and I went off. And you know, for those, if there are any new people here, we usually see the new people. And you know, whatever I say is, you know, just my opinion and my experience. I hope you have a sponsor. You have a right to a sponsor, some man or woman who can help you with these steps. You know, it tells us in chapter 2 that when we're approached by someone in whom the process has come true, who they're not drinking, there's nothing left but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools. And if you have another man or woman who has done this, who has done all 12 steps, maybe you pick that tool up and you hold it funny, and he or she will tell you, well, if you hold it like this, you know, it might be better. And so that's the thing that helps us along. One drunk helping another drunk, you know, and that's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. One drunk helping another drunk. And I was looking around, and I was looking for my book that I wrote, as Don sees it, and you guys, I guess it's sold out here. But if you are new and happen to run across it, throw it away, you know, because it's a one drunk talking to another drunk. The Don program is one drunk talking to himself, you know. And I spent an awful lot of years doing that, you know, and you know, I found out so much when I got sober, you know, it used to tell us that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, and if I would have listened to that carefully, I probably would have saved a lot of women a lot of trouble. And I don't know, I'm from L.A., and you know, it's like, you know, you guys laugh at us, and it's okay because I'm leaving, you know, and I don't mind. Doesn't bother me, you know. I've learned not to hold resentments, but I think I might be the man in the room that's had the most wives. I'm not sure, but you know, in my lifetime, I've had 8 wives in my lifetime, and well, it's not as good as it sounds. Only 3 of them were mine, so you know. If you're an alcoholic like me, you understand that, you know, and I may owe some amends, you know, and I always, if you notice me up here, I always keep moving just a little bit, but I think I'm okay. Pretty sure I'm all right in Iowa. I don't remember a lot of the things, you know, but you know, and I started drinking, and if you're new, I'm going to tell you something, and this is true. If you are an alcoholic, like I'm an alcoholic, if you have the disease of alcoholism, there's medicine that can be purchased that helps with that disease. And it's called alcohol. And it works really, really good, except for the side effects, you know. And you know those things. In fact, I don't know if you have them on late TV out here, but you know, you'll see like this woman or man, and they've been depressed or something, and now they're throwing a frisbee, and the dog grabs it and brings it back, and his tail, you know, and it's, oh man, I want some of that, and then at the end it says could cause dizziness, drowsiness, or anal leakage, you know. And, that's pretty much what alcohol will do for us, you know. But you got to really stick with it, all right? You know, you can't. None of this sipping Chablis if you're going to hit the, you know. So I got after it pretty good, and I would get arrested quite often, and it's part of my story. And I, you know what, I started, the first time I was arrested was right after my father had passed, and I was on my own, and I got drunked up, and I was trying to get in a taxi, and the police took me out, and I was 17, and I went to jail. I probably wouldn't have gone to jail if the regular judge would have been there, but we had a visiting judge, you know, or a substitute judge, and I got 30 days in jail. And so I started out, and you know, what happens is, and it's the same thing in here when it talks about alcohol on page 25, it says, we're unable to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. And the deal is that also works for like some of the other things that happen. And I went to jail and it was terrible, and you know, but then you get out and you know, and it is that thing that step one. You know, I've had guys come to me and they say, well, Don, where's step one in the book? And I'll say, well, you can find it in there, and a lot of people say you can find it in there, but where you really find it is in a jail cell, where you say, God, if you get me out of this, which pretty much means my life is unmanageable, I swear to God that I will never drink again as long as I live. So that's pretty much letting everyone know that my problem is alcohol. So I've admitted I'm powerless over alcohol and my life is unmanageable. And then I get out and, you know, go have a drink. And that's what I was to do for a lot of times. And I would, you know, there was all kinds of different reasons that I got here. I got to, you know, I would have just a ton of time in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got sent here in 1969. I was caught. Well, you know, it was this woman's fault. It was her. Oh, come on! Yeah, I'll tell you, and you see if you don't think it was her fault. I'm counting on you guys. I was keeping my machine gun over at her house. All right. And this was, you know, and I like to think of myself as a man ahead of my time because, you know, machine guns weren't quite fashionable then, you know. But so, you know, I was, you know, being abusive or whatever, and, you know, just the lips going. And she said, leave and, you know, take this with you. And I probably wouldn't have gotten into any trouble whatsoever if I would have just done what I bet everyone in here would have done. Walk out to your car, open the trunk, put the gun in the trunk, close it, and drive home. Except I didn't have a car. And you know, in here it says that we have moral and philosophical convictions galore, but that we can't live up to them. One of my philosophical convictions was, in Los Angeles, it's good to have a car, you know. And I've had a few cars, you know, but I would lose them. I was meant to pay the payment, you know, but, you know, I was meant to pay the child support. And so I am one of those irresponsible guys that you hear the ladies talking about, and, you know, and I feel terrible about it, but it's what I did. And it seemed at the time, you know, I would say stuff like, well, she doesn't need any child support because her boyfriend's got money, you know. And I forgot that I'm responsible for the children. And but you know what? What happened is on my second child, I paid every single dime of her child support and made sure that she was able to have the clothes and stuff that she needed. And part of that drunk, part of that, about 8 years of it while I was not drinking, while I was drinking, and then the rest sober. And I'm a lot better father sober. In fact, Heather, she's my youngest. She, when she was having a baby, I said, well, I wish that I had some money put away so I could send, we knew it was going to be a boy, so I could send the boy to college. And I said, but what I will do is I'll buy diapers until he doesn't need them anymore, you know. And I immediately began to try and potty train him, you know, just to... It's legal, you know, just to cut my losses a little bit. And my daughter said to me, she was like about, I think she was 26 at the time, she said, Dad, you don't need to send him to college. You can teach him integrity. And I went, wow, you know, doesn't she know who her father is? And the fact of the matter is, she knows who her father was before you guys got a hold of me. And she knew what I was doing now. And it's a lot better what I'm doing now. I'm trying to be of service like you guys do. I've talked to a lot of you, and I understand that service is important. It tells us in here in chapter 7 that nothing will so much ensure immunity from the first drink as intensive work with another alcoholic. Well, it doesn't take a Rhodes Scholar to figure that one out, and there's no shortage of alcoholics. You know, we have them. So the thing is I would have had all this time. Oh, yeah, what happened was when I was going up the street, and this is in Hollywood, they had sheriffs there. But they have cars, and we're up to date there. So I figured if I have to walk up the street with this automatic weapon, I might as well look cool. So, you know, and I know I must have really looked good going up there. And all of a sudden, all these sheriffs came. And I, even though I was drunk, I have this peculiar mental twist that the book talks about. Smart guy says, gun, police, not a good idea. And I put it over in the bushes there and, you know, began to try and look nonchalant, you know. And the cop got right up in my face because he knew I was the guy, and he says, look, punk, if you don't tell us where that gun is, I'm going to bust you for drunk. Ooh. However, that was a $25 fine. And how would that look to all my lower companions, you know, if you had to walk into a jail cell, you know, and you had, what are you in for? And you had to tell them, well, it's a 5-0 shoe. I was walking while drunk, you know, and it's a little embarrassing. It's a little embarrassing. So I'm thinking it over with this masterful mind, and I'm thinking, let's make a deal. So I talked to this cop, and I said, look, officer, I'm a good enough guy. If I tell you where the gun is, would you not bust me? He says, no, Don, look at these people. We just need to get that thing off the street and let people know that they're safe and everything. So I thought it over with this masterful mind, in which there is a peculiar mental twist, and I said, should I go for the drunk walking, the $25 fine, or the felony behind bush number two over here. I've been in Iowa one day, and you guys know what I did, don't you? And, you know, in the guy's defense, I will say he did not arrest me. He had his partner arrest me, and so... Well, I mean, I think that's technically he kept his word, and they sent me to jail, and they sent me to court, and I got a lawyer that the same girl, I made her believe that it was her fault, and she got me this guy from Shyster and Fenster or something, I don't know, whatever, one of these Hollywood attorneys, and they got me off with brandishing a firearm in the city limits, all right? But I had to do 6 AA meetings. So I went to a place called Radford that's not there anymore. Alabama Carruthers was there, if any of you remember her, and she's a lovely lady. I went, and I didn't like it or not like it. I just some nights would drink, some nights not. And I thought, well, you know, a bunch of lames here, you know, talking about God and fellowship and, gee, join us for coffee. And, you know, I wouldn't drink with you. I'm not going to join you for coffee. I did notice that there were some nice-looking ladies there. You know, I immediately picked up on that. And really, it was really exciting because some of them had jobs. And for me... a functioning alcoholic is a guy that has a wife that works. You know that, and that's not the way to live. That's not the way to live. But that's how you got me. I didn't come here a saint, okay? And you know the thing is, I didn't. You know, and I thought, what a bunch of lames. And I thought, well, you know, I might come back later. You know, if things got worse for me, like if I was caught with a bazooka or something. I don't know how you carry those. And off I went for another 11 years, and you guys didn't spoil my drinking for me. I spoiled it for myself. And 11 years later, I actually had seen a guy on television. It was on Hill Street Blues, and he got 12-stepped, and I was sitting there in Beverly Hills at my girlfriend's house, my then girlfriend's house, and I'm crying and. And she says, what's the matter? And I said, well, he's going to get sober, you know. And I'd remembered going to those meetings, you know. And I said, I'm going to call Alcoholics Anonymous. And the next day I called, and the guy talked to me, and he says, you know, come on over, and tonight's the men's stag, so, you know, when you come in, you'll be a little bit afraid. And I'm afraid? What are you talking about? When you see that door black out, it means I walk through it, all right? And I'm not afraid of anybody, you know. In here it tells us we're all driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. I don't know if that means 25 of each or whatever. You guys need to figure that out. Yeah. No, so figure it out, you know, if it would be bad, you know. And it also says something in there that is just weirder than heck. It says that we are an extreme example of self-will run riot, though we don't usually think so. And that, you know, when I stop to think about it, I think, well, self-will would be bad. Self-will run riot would be worse. An extreme example of self-will run riot would be catastrophic. And then all of a sudden, I don't even know it. I think it's everyone else. And that's how we get here. And that's why those steps are so important, so we can get down to the stock and trade of, you know, what's going on inside here, what man or woman we brought to the party. And, you know, I know that God wanted all of us, because you looked at yourself in the mirror today or whatever, and you saw yourself, and I can see you. So, you know, God didn't make anything extra. You know, he could have if he wanted to, God's will. If he wanted to, he could have made a 36-foot-tall German shepherd. But I don't think you saw any of those out there today, because he didn't want one. But he made one of you, and he made one of me. And our job, our only job, is to play the role he assigned as best we can. So the deal is, for me, because I'm a drunk, I need to be sober, and I need to try and straighten my act up a little bit. Because just the first part is about drinking. You know, the causes and conditions. The conditions are the things, my defects of character, and the way I live my life. And those are the causes, and the conditions are the things that go on around me. So I have to get down to the causes and conditions, and that's why the inventory is good. And so my sponsor, you know, I got sober. Let me tell you how I got sober. I was going to, you know, they, they, uh, I didn't go that night, you know, after calling, because I found some Foster's ale in her refrigerator, and I figured, you know, there's probably a guy over in Brisbane that would, you know, kill to have this, you know, the old eat your food, because in China they're starving. So I didn't make it for another 2 or 3 months, and then I was we were doing some scenes. We would get these acting scenes for these girls coming into town, and we'd shoot them and tell them we were going to show them to all the casting directors. And I don't know why they thought we knew anyone, because we had this crummy little Betamax, you know, but we were doing our best. And there was this one gal, and we wanted, and she was terrible. And by the way, it's not a bad thing to be a bad actress or a bad actor. It just happens. But, and these guys wanted to charge her another $500 for a comedy scene. So I was feeling, so I'm getting all drunked up, because, you know, I needed to do that to perpetrate this deal. And I was pretty well juiced by the time I went home, and I stopped off, and it was like about 4 minutes after six at the 7-Eleven. You guys have the Casey's or whatever, yeah. And I got this at 4 minutes after six, and took it home. It was still dark, and I was looking at this, and where my desk is, I was looking in this window. This window that looked like a mirror, and I saw myself, and I hated myself so much that I decided that I was going to kill myself. And I'm drinking my little Budweiser and figuring out how I'm going to kill myself. And even though I was drunk and hated myself, I figured, well, I would like to look good. That would be nice if I looked good. So I figured I'd get out my Marine dress uniform with the medals on it and my pearl-handled. I was never in the service, so I wasn't. But what a great idea, don't you think? And I had no guns, because the police were always taking the guns away from me, you know. So I thought, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll overdose, and I no, I couldn't do that, because I did that on Wednesday. And by the way, I had nothing left. And there is and for those of you, and I come in from L.A. and we talk a little bit about drugs out there, but we have the singleness of purpose, just like you do. The only requirement is desire to stop drinking. And we talk about drugs a little bit, but the thing is, they are different. It's different, and if you don't know it, you've probably heard it before. But it's like an alcoholic will steal your money, go downtown, get all drunked up, and come back and say, I swear to God, I'll pay you this money back first of the month when my SSI check comes. I'll do that. That's an alcoholic. Drug addict, steal your money, go downtown, get loaded, come back, and you know what? He will help you look for the money. So you see the difference there? It's just a little difference. But now here's the good news. I don't want to give you bad news without giving you good news. The good news is, it's sort of like penicillin. If I'm taking some penicillin for a pneumonia, and I have an infected hangnail, it'll take care of that. So if we're taking those other next 11 steps after we mentioned the product that we like, then it's going to take care of that spiritual contact with God, and that comes in. So, you know, I'm there, and I still want to kill myself, because I hate myself so much. And I look around this little cruddy place I lived in, and I found a 6-inch Ginzu steak knife, serrated and guaranteed for a lifetime. And this baby was going to make it, all right, you know. And I thought, well, you know, don't cut your wrist. And by the way, don't go say that guy from L.A. came out here. Do not kill yourself, all right? But I had cut my wrist before, and that's stupid, because it doesn't kill you, and it just hurts like heck when you put your watch on, you know. So I thought, well, you know what? I'll cut my throat, because I heard if you cut your throat, you just quietly go to see God. And then I thought about it, and I thought, well, I don't have anybody that's going to bury me. They're going to put me down wherever they put guys like me down. And, you know, when they don't just sew you up real nice, they just sort of baste you, you know. And I don't want to do that. So, but I figured, you know, to look good in that coffin when all the, and this is the sad part. This is the sad part. At the time I was going to kill myself, I thought every woman that I had ever kissed was thinking about me. And that, I know, that's sad. So that's how you got me too, you know. And I thought, but a peculiar mental twist, yes. But a legend in my own mind, I figured, I know what I'll do. I'll open up my collar, and I'll cut real low. You know, so that we're not as low as Lorena Bobbitt cut, but, you know, at least at least low enough so the collar would cover it up. And you know, and what happened was, a buddy of mine came over, and he said, what are you doing? I said, I'm killing myself. He says, what that? And I said, oh, leave me alone. And he he got the phone book out and he got the suicide lady on the phone, and not the suicide lady on the phone. He got the anti-suicide lady. If he would have misdialed by one number, you'd have a better speaker tonight. So I talked to her, and she said, you need either West Valley Mental Health or Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd already been to Camarillo. Camarillo's a state hospital. It's now closed in Los Angeles, and it's out in Camarillo, really. And I'd been out there a couple of times, and I saw a couple of, ooh, but I have something that perhaps you don't have. I have, from the state of California, a certificate of competency. I have one from 1979, and no, I mean one from, yeah, 79, one from 80, you know. So I remember one time a lady in Burbank, I was, you know, being crazy or something, and she said, "You're nuts." And I said, "Well, not according to Governor Bryant." And she, like so many ladies in my house, said, "Get out." And so, you know, what do? You get out and you go tell the bartender how terrible women are and all of this stuff. And, you know, you go on and on like that. And so the deal is, they told me about Alcoholics Anonymous, and indeed I did go in the next day. And, well, excuse me, it was not the next day, because it was already the next day. I went in the day after that because I needed a little bit of time to sober up and clean up. And I went in, and I told you that I had this girlfriend at the time. In fact, we were engaged. But I remembered Alcoholics Anonymous from before, and I was kind of looking for a wife, you know. I was looking to upgrade just a little bit, you know, and I'm sure that I presented a really good picture. You know, I probably showed a lot of potential when I walked in there after going to kill myself. And, you know, here's the problem with potential. I think probably most of us have it, but if you take potential and put it over here, and you take alcoholism over here, alcoholism will kick butt on potential every single time, you know, and that's how it happens. So I go in there, and at the end, they all grab onto my hand, and I'm thinking, well, they saw me come in. That's pretty cool, you know. And we did the prayer, and I knew many of the words. And at the last, you know, they go like this, and they say, "Keep coming back." And I'm thinking, you know, sort of like the wave, you know. And I was thinking, and in my mind, that wave all centered into me. You understand what I'm saying? I thought, well, they've noticed that I've arrived, you know. But one of the things that I didn't do was I didn't announce that I was an alcoholic, you know, because at the time I thought I was like this big cheese, you know, and I didn't want anyone. I don't know what I thought they were doing there, but, you know, and I actually, when I got there, I had stopped drinking on the 12th of December, but I was still doing the non-habit heathen devil weed and the some really, really good cocaine, you know, and I don't know, you know, I never once called my dealer up and said, "How is that stuff?" And he says, "Oh, it's crap, but I'm still going to charge you the same amount." You know, never happened. So, and a guy got me in the back of the room, and he was marking my little book for me, my meeting book. And he said, "It'd be good if you got this." He says, "By the way, so I know the meetings are very enjoyable for you, I've noticed, but it might be nice, you know, because we don't do those things too." And he had a television program at the time, and he wanted to see if I could do 30 days. So I figured, well, if I do 30 days sober, I'll be this guy's sidekick next year, you know. So I started off with the 30 days, and I already had 5 days, and because this was New Year's Eve day, and I'd already gotten 5 days because I got loaded on Christmas, so I had a 5-day head start. And at about 15 days, because what had happened, my medicine had been taken away from me, and I hadn't replaced it with either any fellowship or any steps or any power greater than myself. And so at about 15 days, I'm deciding I'm going to go out and get drunk. And I was at Chariots of Fire with my girlfriend, and she was in her car, and I was in the car that she gave me. And lest you think that I'm this big studly guy, I'll tell you the name of the license plate on the car was Bambi. with an I, you know. It's hard to intimidate people on the, you know, I used to chase people on the freeway miles and miles and miles, you know, and then just so I could get up alongside them and give them the look, you know, and they'd be over in their car thinking about their kids and their job and say, "Wow, I think Bambi has gas." driving their car, and, you know, So, you know, the deal is that I needed to get sober, but I wanted to leave, and I said to her, honey, I'm not going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous anymore. I'm going to continue to not drink, which causes me a lot of problems. But a man like myself who comes home from a hard day of doing nothing needs drugs to calm down. And much like Lois and Ann must have said, okay, dear, that'll be fine. And I said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to one last meeting. One last meeting. And I looked in the book, and John had marked the 2x2 speaker meeting in Westwood, California. I said, I'll shoot on down there. And I walked in there, and here, and this is what's funny, because you guys look great tonight, and that's what they look like in Westwood. And I was in Levi's and a T-shirt and with a fatigue jacket, and it was raining, and I was wet, and I was 15 days sober. Gee, what a surprise. I wasn't feeling that great. But I said, I'm getting out of here. And I reached down to get some cookies because I wanted to take some cookies home to my girlfriend's girls. And I have a 6-cookie hand, so I'm a good provider, you know. And so I'm just starting to leave with my 6 cookies. And over here, standing right over here, is a guy in the door. And he's kind of leaning against the door like this. And he looks at me, you know. And he knows I'm in trouble. You know, I had those little puppy dog on a freeway eyes. He knew I was in trouble. And that's the thing, newcomers, you know, you guys look great, you know, and the thing is, you need to tell us, you know, so get your heads up, you know, or from wherever you have them. And, you know, just, and let us have a look and see what's going on there. And he knew, and he walked right over, and he said his name, and I looked at him. And this was the guy that played the captain on the television show that had 12-stepped me a couple months before, and he was in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And he said, how are you doing? And I said, I'm doing fine. You know, I lied to him, you know. And the newcomers do lie. And let me tell you something. Old-timers lie, too. And I had a guy, he gets around a lot. You'd know him if I said his name, and I'm not going to say his name, but we were in another guy sponsored. One had 10 years and one had 11 years, and we're back, you know, in the back room, us, God, and the big book, you know, really, you know, taking care of. And all of a sudden, this guy lies. And I'm thinking, oh, no. You know, the man has come in contact with me, and he's still lying. I don't quite understand that. And I said, what do I do? Do I bust him, or do I tell him later, quietly, so I don't embarrass him? And I said, God, give me a hand on this. And God gave me a hand. He lied again. And I said, hold it right there. You are lying. And you know what he said? He said, I know, but hear me out. And so you can understand why I love hanging out with alcoholics. I don't care how sober they are. They just make me happy, you know. And it's like, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And so that's why I keep going. And you go to enough meetings and you get to have this joy in your life. And the deal is that, you know, I finally got over to Radford. I didn't go out, obviously. I wouldn't be here. I went back in and sat down, and I went back and I said, my name is Don and I'm an alcoholic. And you know what they said? They said, hi, Don. They didn't care what I did for a living. They didn't, you know, they didn't care if I was there for a wife or there to, you know, they just didn't care. You know, you hear this all the time. And by the way, if your sponsor told you this, listen to your sponsor, all right? But they say, you must come here for the right reason. No, that's not even true. You don't have to come here for the right reason. You need to stay for the right reason, you know, and that's the thing. Give us a little chance to tell you about this thing and tell you how it's changed our life. We have all kinds of advice. I know you guys must do it. We do it too, you know, unsolicited advice. You know, this one, don't get in a relationship in the first year, all right? Which is great on paper. It's great on paper, but no one has ever made it a year, all right? Don't drink in the first year, all right? So that's the deal. So I'm going along, and I get my sponsor. I have a same sponsor. He just celebrated at our house. We have a little meeting there, and he just celebrated 40 years of sobriety, you know? And I've been with him since I gave him his 16-year birthday cake. And so he got me, and he's trying to teach me the stuff that's in this book. And I love this guy. He could do the steps. I don't know which is on which side, but he could do the steps. Are the steps over there? Okay. He could do the steps, by heart. He knew them, and he was telling me about them, and the thing about, you're powerless and everything. And he started out with the four step. I was about 6 months by now, and he sat me down, and we listed some resentments, and then analyzed them, find out, did it affect my self-esteem, pocketbook, ambition, personal relations, and sexual relations. And then it says, you know what it says? It says something just totally crazy. It says, perhaps the person who harmed you was spiritually sick. And then it says, forget what they did. We resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where were we selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? And those are the general nature of our wrongs, the exact nature of our wrongs, because step five asks us to admit to God ourselves and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. So if we're dishonest, that's cool. That's the general nature, and that's good. But if we want the exact nature, we've got to get down to a liar, a cheat, a thief, a people pleaser, a self-deception guy, not living in the now, or gal, whatever. And then we get the exact nature of our wrong, because it's just like if you say, how do you feel today? I feel crummy. Crummy is like what you get when brownies don't rise or something. I'm not a cook, so I don't know this thing. But, it's like we need to know the exact nature of our wrongs. And so we get that. And then the second thing, it's called the three major manifestations of self, resentment, fear, and sexual problems. The second one is fear. And fear is nothing really more than not trusting God. And it gives us a little formula on page 68. Three paragraphs totally solves our fear problem. At least it did for me, and I have no reason it wouldn't for you. I'll just give you an example. And if you look on 68, you'll find out these things. I'm going to say fear of financial insecurity. All right? And it says, we ask God to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. Dear God, please remove my fear of financial insecurity, or insecurity, either way, Give me a twofer tonight, please. And direct my attention to what You would have me be. And my attention was directed that He had me be a man that has a job. I actually have two jobs. I have three pensions, not too shabby, and my bills are paid. And I go, well, that's okay. Yeah, but I owe a lot of money. Then do as I think God would have me. Up in the middle of the page, God would have me pay my bills, try not to carry credit card debt. This is just me, maybe you too, And if I'm going to be late, call Him up and tell Him I'm going to be late. Make sure that I've got the money there. And the other thing, maybe don't spend more money than I have. What a concept that I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, And the third one is AA code for you may not get your wish, is humbly rely on Him. Humbly rely on Him, which means, all right, maybe I have to move out of the nice fancy place and get a littler car or something like that. But, relying on God, And then I don't have to be afraid. And it says at once we commence to outgrow fear. And there's two places in this book where it says it once. There's other places, but two major places. One is in the doctor's opinion when it says we are restless, irritable, and discontent unless we take a drink. We see others taking, and at once we begin to feel that ease and comfort. And then we go to God, and at once, So here's the deal that's given to us. God or drinking. God or drinking. And when I came in here, they said, you're going to either have to live a spiritual life or die an alcoholic death. And I said to myself, how bad an alcoholic death are we talking about over here? And that's how I got here. That's how you got me, And so I'm writing this stuff down, and then he says, well, get back to me, and you'll tell it to me, and then we'll do the sixth and seventh. You'll do the sixth and seventh step, and then we'll make some amends to some of these people that you've harmed. So I didn't quite do it right away. I didn't jump into action. There's a place in there where it says it'll have a third step will have little permanent effect unless at once followed by an effort to get rid of these things that have been blocking us, and moving on, to get rid of the defects of character. So I must have missed that in there. And so I'm going on along, and I wasn't fooling my sponsor at all, because a sponsor can tell. You guys, you can't fool a sponsor, because if you're working on that fourth step, you're talking to him or her all the time about, I found out a defect of character, unlicensed mind reading. No one else had that one, You know, because I'm unique. And, you know, that's what you do when you're writing the four-step. When you're not writing it, your sponsor says, how's that four-step going? Oh, it's great. Thank you for asking. Thank you very much for asking. So I wasn't doing it. And what happened to me? Here's what happened to me. I'm about 11 months. Somebody's liver is ready back there, I think. Okay. I'm here for 11 months, and finally this kid comes across the room. He's a tattooed biker from New Jersey. Speed freak and alcoholic, and comes up to me and he says, would you be my sponsor? And I'm thinking, whoa, the cream has risen to the top in Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me just run it by my sponsor. And I went over to Cliff and I said, you know, Steve wants me to sponsor him. Terry's laughing because she knows Steve. In fact, we got together at a party at his house years and years ago. And then we got together again later after that. So that's another story. You know, that story is about, we were together for a little while, about, I don't know, 20 years ago. And then she got mad at me, or I got mad at her. We got mad at, I can't remember which one it was. And then she went off and got married in between time, you know. I didn't get married in between time. And I made amends to her. And then what happened is she still was mad at me. And she would come up in a meeting, and I'd be standing next to Marie, and she'd say hi to her and not say hi to me. And I'm like, okay, that's the way it's going to be. And then, but I didn't be mean to her and so forth. And I did my job in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we finally did get back together. And we've been, it'll be June 15th. Oh, that was close. You see how I keep moving? This is how I... Okay. So, I totally forgot where I am because now I'm scared. Thank you. Thank you. I'll just stop for a little beverage here. So anyway, Steve says, and I go to my sponsor, and my thank you very much. And my sponsor says, poor Steve. I'm thinking, what the heck is he talking about? I go to meetings. I go with him on 12-step calls. I said, what are you talking about? He says, well, you can tell him how not to drink for 11 months, but you cannot show him the 4-step because you haven't done one, and you can't listen to the 5th-step because you don't know what one sounds like. And the man had me on a technicality there. So immediately, I'm over there with Steve. Oh, Stephen, we're powerless over alcohol. Our lives have become unmanageable. I'm writing over here, you know, I'm resentful at my sister and at this and that. I'm afraid of this and that. And I beat him. But before I beat him, he said to me, well, when are we going to do the 4-step? I said, don't worry about the 5th-step. I said, don't worry about the 5th-step. We're going to do it sometime after June 15th, you know. So, you know, that. And I beat him, and he did it, and I had that. And then so I had a man that I was taking down this path, and I had something to give him. I had something to pass on because I'd found out about myself, that it wasn't about them, about all the ladies, you know. And I'd found out about the different things, about my defects of character and so on and so forth. So I was able to pass this on. And then, of course, in the 4-step, the third manifestation of self is sexual problems. And the big book says we all have sexual problems. I did too, okay. I know it's hard to believe. In fact, now that we're in Iowa, and I've been wanting to tell somebody this for the longest time, don't be afraid. When I drank, I wasn't that good a lover, all right? I know, you can't believe that, but it was true. I'm not the first one. I'm not the first one. Back if you had to read Macbeth in school, I don't know if you had to, but, you know, it's there, and they're going to have the king of Scotland come over to their house. You know, Dr. Bob says we all have a habit of getting tight at just the wrong moment, and so they had the king of Scotland coming over to their house, and they were all drunk. All right? Sounds like my house, okay? And the only one that wasn't drunk was the porter. And he's back in the green room for about 3 acts, and he comes out, he has one scene, and he walks across the stage, and he does a soliloquy, and there's a knock, 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 there's a knocking indeed. There are 3 things that drink provoke. Merry sir, lechery, nose painting, and urine. It provokes the act. What takes away the performance? And that's, I'm sorry. Sorry to say that. That's kind of like it was for me. You know, not a pretty sight. It was like trying to shove a marshmallow into a light socket. You know, not. Okay, but it was a big marshmallow. So there I am, you know, and this happened to me once over in Burbank, and I, you know, if you know what I'm talking about, and apparently from the head bobbing you do, and you know what's funny is the women are going, and the guys are going, no! I said to this gal, gee, this has never happened to me before. And she said, yes, it has. You were with my cousin last week. And she had me on a technicality. So, you know, and I love women, but, you know, I loved alcohol more. There's no question about it. I would rather, you know, and I used to like to go into the bars and I get there and I smoked at that time and sit in front of that smoky mirror and really, you know, look really cool, you know, every woman's dream. You know? And the more I drank, the better I started looking to me. Yeah? And, of course, who is it important that I please? Me. You know, that's how I got here, by the way. So I brought a whole ton of luggage in when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. So anyway, you know, they have to do that thing. And Cliff kind of knew me. And, you know, and I was, at that time, I had a career, decent career in show business. And I was telling him about all the little starlets and semi-stars. And Cliff said, I could really care less. What I am interested in is, can you not drink for another day? You know, and I thought, well, you know, it's hard to impress this guy, and you know, and the thing is that he said, you know what, we have a page in this book for sexual athletes like yourself. It's page 69. And I said, what? And I went there. And I don't know if this is true, you know. I don't know if it's true, but you know that chapter 3, more about alcoholism? We know about alcoholism. I think Bill Wilson and the gang put that in so they could get sex over here on 69. I'm not sure that that's true. So I got there, and I thought, well, this is going to be good. This is finally a little thing written, you know, that'll help me out with the women and so forth. And you know what it says in there? It says that I cannot be selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate. And I can't unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness. I don't know about you guys here in Iowa, but back where I live, that cut out about 96% of my action there, you know. Because if I'm telling a girl the truth, you know, why would she want to go out with me, you know, and that's the deal. So Cliff gave me the thing. He said, you know, work harder with another alcoholic. And he gave me this prayer that's right from the big book. Is I call it Riggs. Pray for the right ideal, for guidance, for strength and sanity to do the right thing. And somehow that, you know, that sort of worked for me. And I started doing the 12-step calls with him. And we'd go around, and every once in a while he'd say something, and he knew so much about the book and about those steps. And then every once in a while he'd say, and Don, what about you? And I go, oh, well, you know, I've got 3 months and I haven't had a drink, and this is, you know, things are great, and, you know, whatever it is. And one time, and I think I'm about 13 months sober then, and I had one or two guys that I was sponsoring, and a call came in to Radford, and a guy was dying of alcoholism. By the way, pardon me for sweating up here, but if I don't, I'll explode, all right? So it's a must. Have you ever? That would be probably interesting. And so I had to do this 12-step, and Cliff couldn't make it because he was working. And I said, well, there's only me. And he said, well, grab a couple guys. And I said, I only have 13 months. And he said, well, did you read Bill Wilson's story in there? When Ebbie Thatcher came to him, he only had 60 days. So get someone and get in a car and go out and see if you can help this guy. So I got Dave, who had 3 months, And we're looking around for someone else, you know, someone strong. And all we had was English Bill over here who had 11 days. So, you know, whatever. So we jumped in the car. Us got in the big book one more time, you know. And I'm feeling great because I'm the head drunk, all right? Because I'm... So we're over there. And I knock on the door, knock, knock, knock. And he opens the door and he says, "Yeah, what do you want?" I said, "Wait a second, it's me, Don. You just talked to me on the phone from Alcoholics Anonymous." He's, "Oh, yeah, come on in." And so we came in, and I've lived in some funky places. You must trust me on this. I know you'll believe me. But this place was a what they call a bachelor pad out there. You probably have. And it was about from that over there like this, just one room with a kitchen over here, you know, a little alcove with the top ramen and pizza boxes. And in the bathroom was a cat box that the cat had long since beaten. And... He had no furniture. No furniture. Sound familiar to a few of us? Yes. Except he had a kind of a funky mattress, no frame, over on the floor, and some really soiled, ugly-looking bedspreads or something over there. And so he did have one piece of furniture was the cinder block bookcase, you know, with a copy of The Prophet to impress chicks, you know. So you know he was happening and. So we're down there, and I'm giving him my best pitch, and, "Oh, God has been good to me, and look at these men are in my life," and he's just, So I kind of nudged Dave, and Dave was with a big rock and roll band, and he was getting sober, and so he was there, and he said, "Well, I'm only 3 months sober, but I'm going to Florida to do a record," and I guess this guy didn't like rock and roll. So he wasn't listening to Dave, and the only guy, our designated hitter over here, is English Bill with 11 days. And I'm thinking, we're in big trouble here. I said, "Bill, what do you got to say?" And he looked at the guy, and he says, "Bruce, I'm going to tell you something. If you don't stop drinking alcohol, you're going to lose all this." Bruce heard him. In fact, when we were over at the convention, I ran into him. And, you know, he's got like 20 years or something, 22 years or whatever. And so the thing is, and I'm one of these guys, and I believe this, it's like it's nice to have a little bit of time. But if God has something he wants said, he'll put it in the mouth of whoever's talking. Because God doesn't care too much about time. Because we invented time to know if we were late, you know. And God just, you know. God's got lots of time, and all he looks down and sees is some of his kids. And he says, "I need this said at this moment," and he's talking, so he's going to say it. And so I'm not one of these ones that says, "Sit down, shut up, and listen," because I need to learn. And it's true that sometimes we need to protect the newcomers to ease up a little bit, you know, stop doing those fifth steps from the podium. But, you know, aside from that, it works out pretty good. And so things started to get better, and another man came into my life, and another man, and another man, and I'm going there, and there's nothing like carrying this program to another human being, and you ladies too. It's like it lights you up. If you're not sponsoring someone, it's okay, because the 12 and 12 tells us that we just give their two ears. Every man and woman in this room has given me their two ears. I think everyone's got their ears. I'm not dead sure on that, but you know, that's how you do your 12 step. And to sponsor someone is good. And my little teeny life that was this big got this big when another man came in, and this big, and it got huge out there. And the thing is, I got here, and I was doing what we all, every single man and woman in this room, surviving. I have survived. And that's very cool, except you get a little of this big book under your belt, and you can live up here of getting by. You guys are surviving. I'm getting by. And if you do all 12 steps, you can live way, way up here at Child of God. And the only person that can take you out is you. You know, the news is that you don't have to ever take another drink of alcohol as long as you live if you don't want to. And I got even better news than that. You don't have to ever take a drink of alcohol again in your lifetime, even if you do want to. And when you want to, you call one of us. You call one of these people in here. You call me out in California. And I'll do my best to tell you what it might do for you. So the thing is, we do it a day at a time. Because if we try and live more than one day at a time, that's another form of dishonesty, is not living in the now. And great things have happened for me. You know, just all kinds of wonderful financial things. And by the way, that doesn't always happen. But it's nice when it does. You know, it's like, you know, money can't buy you happiness, and that's true, but you can lease. And I like that, you know. That works for me, you know. They don't know the difference. They don't know the difference. So it's been really good around here. We're going to have us a good weekend. I'm going to sit down, but I want to leave you with a thought. And here's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about a thing called hope. We got to have some hope. We got to have some dreams. And when I came in here, I was devoid of all hope and all dreams. I was 41 years old, and I thought my life was over. And tonight, I'm wearing shoes that are 41. So, you know, that shows you that I've come a little bit away. And what happened is, little by little, I started getting these dreams. And my dreams are going to be different than your dreams. And your dreams are just fine. These are my dreams, but I'm going to tell you about my dreams. Remember I told you about dancing around the house? I always wanted to see a Broadway show. And I was an actor, and I'd never seen a Broadway show. I always wanted to go to New York and run a marathon. And, you know, this is not your marathon body, but that's what I wanted to do. And I wanted to skydive. And I wanted to go to Paris and England and Barcelona and Madrid and see these wonderful paintings that I'd read about and only dreamed about, and see some of the paintings in the United States. And I only dreamed about them. And when Heather, my younger daughter, who I told you about, when she graduated from high school, I did nothing for her older sister. I wanted to do something for her. And when she graduated, I wanted to see if she couldn't go with the kids. And so what happened? Not in the first year or the second year or the third year. It was way up in the seventh year of my sobriety. And I got on an airplane, and I flew to New York City with a ticket that I had purchased with a credit card that belonged to me and not to a woman, all right? And I saw Phantom of the Opera. I bought $15 standing-only room tickets. You go on the back, and they have a little plaque there, number 6, number 7. And there I was, and I took the mother of one of the guys I sponsored. And so I started off seeing Michael Crawford in Phantom of the Opera. The next day I got up, I ran and completed the New York City Marathon. And just a little, thank you very much, just so I can brag a little bit, thank you. The guy that won the race, a little spindly Kenyan, you know, just running around there, he had the wreath on, and he's back in his hotel drinking Perrier, you know, after 2 hours and 15 minutes, 2 hours and 18 minutes. And at 2 hours and 18 minutes, I was still in Queens, all right? And I kept running. And I ran through Harlem that I'd been afraid of my whole life, and those little kids were out on their steps, and they were applauding. 5 hours later, you know, oh, you can do it, you can do it. And I finished that marathon. Anybody can run for 2 hours and 18 minutes. It takes a sober man like myself to run for 5 hours and 15 minutes. Thank you. And if you don't know me, You might say to yourself, or the person sitting there, this guy from Hollywood, he feels pretty good about himself. Well, I'm going to tell you something. I do. But when I got here, I hated myself so much, I was going to kill me. So that's what happened to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm happy with the man I am today. I got to Heather graduated from high school, and because I'd been to New York and knew the city, I flew her to New York to see Phantom of the Opera because I had frequent flyer miles, and I had a few more left, and she got to go to Hawaii with the other kids over there. So that was pretty cool. And I wanted to skydive, and I skydived my first time. And by the way, I will tell you, for the new people or those that haven't read this book in a while, this big book is much like a parachute. It will not save your life unless you open it. All right? So try and remember that, you know. Pull the ripcord on that one. But I hadn't made it to Europe yet, and one of the guys I sponsor came to me, and he said, I'm getting married. Would you be my best man? And I said, I will do that. And I said, where's the wedding? He said, it's in Rome. And I said, all right. So at 47 years old, I got my first passport, bought my first tuxedo, got on an airplane with another ticket that I paid for with a credit card that had my name on it, and I went to Rome and stood up with these kids, and they got married, and I got to see all the stuff in Rome. And, you know, just many, many things have come true. And if you're new here, or if you're having a tough time or whatever, and we're saying, gee, Don, we're glad that you came out here to talk to us, But, you know, we're glad you got around your fat butt around 26 miles. Thank you very much. And I hope Heather enjoyed Phantom of the Opera, and we're glad your parachute opened. But what is this? What has this got to do with Alcoholics Anonymous and not drinking? And I'm going to tell you. Nothing. Unless you're a man or woman who has the disease of alcoholism and comes in here and finds another man or woman to help them with the steps, does the steps, day to time stays sober and gets a power of their power greater than themselves of their very own and stays sober a day at a time, and then it has everything to do with staying sober. And you can do it too. You can do it too, and it's the 11th step, and it's the pages are numbered. It's on page 86 in there. And you go home tonight, and you thank God for this roundup. You thank God for the men and women who are here and the men and women you're going to meet. Lay your head down on your pillow tonight and let your dreams begin. Thank you. Yeah.